those who enter the country illegally and those who employ them disrespect rule of law, and they are showing disregard for those who are following the law.
Lying again, I see. Oh, hi there. Mark Congleton here. It's the Monday edition of The Daily Perspective. Good to have you along for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping your weekend was great, that you got recharged, rested, and ready to tackle another week. And we can only hope that this week will be as good as last week was. How you doing today? Did you have a good weekend? I hope you did. Ours was rather uneventful. Nobody got hurt. Nothing weird. Well, I can't say nothing weird happened because weird stuff did happen, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. But on the whole, we kind of watched the weather pass through. It got really cold. Some areas around us got snow. We didn't. Never saw a flake. Unless we looked in the mirror, but we didn't get any of the white stuff here. We just got rain, and there's more of it coming. In fact, today, tomorrow, the next day, we're under a flash flood watch. The ground has been saturated enough. The rivers are already high. There are pictures on the news in our local area of all kinds of high water situations, and, of course, the people on the news are warning you, don't drive through those areas. Find another route. Go around. Don't drown. That's the big thing. Go around. Don't drown. And they're right. I mean, if you're gonna insist on driving through that high water, I hope your insurance is paid off and you have kissed your family goodbye, because you just never know. Because under that high water could be a big chunk of asphalt that has finally eroded and washed away, and you'll find yourself going under. So you just don't do it. If the water is high, don't risk it. Find a way around. And if there is no way around, well, find yourself a convenience store and stock up, because you're now camping out. That's just the way it is here right now. It's going to be wet, lots of rain, lots of flooding, and we'll see how that all works out over the next few days. Let's see, weird things over the weekend. I've told you the stories about our wiring, our power at the house, and how bizarre that is. Well, that all hopefully will be remedied today, because I've got a call back from the electrician on Saturday, and he will be coming in this morning, really just about the time I finish up today. I said, please, let's make it after 9. He said, that's great. I got to pick up the helper. I got to do this. I got to do that. So hopefully we won't have an interruption before we get done recording here. And, I may end up having to postpone posting this podcast. So if you jumped on to grab the podcast today and it was a little late, that's why. Because I had an electrician coming, and hopefully they won't have to shut all the power. Well, they will. They'll have to shut all the power off. Hopefully I can get the podcast uploaded and ready for you before the power goes off. Digging back into that story, as I told you, we've got a bizarre situation in the house where, in case you aren't up to speed on this, I discovered last week when I was trying to run a fresh cable, a new piece of wire for the light over the kitchen sink, because I couldn't get it working. I replaced the bulb, I replaced the fixture, and it wouldn't come on. The switch was just, I tested the switch, and the switch was good. So obviously it's the wire from the switch going to the lamp. So I went to the attic. When I got to the attic, I found, after brushing back all of the insulation where the wiring was, I found where the wiring went from the attic down into the wall behind the kitchen cabinets, behind the sink, and it's all charred and black. And upon closer inspection, what I discovered was there was a nail driven through that particular wire that I know of. And it failed. It finally, after 40 years, because the house was built in 77, so that's 43 years ago, after 43 years of sputtering and sparking and smoldering, the cable, the wire finally gave out. And I couldn't replace it because when I tried to pull it, I got the nail out of the way. I managed to do that. When I got the nail out of the way and started pulling, the wire actually broke. And apparently all of that arcing and spinning over the years that's been charring the 2x4s around it had also damaged the two other wires that ran through that hole. So we have this weird thing where some of the lights on that end of the house work and some of them don't. And well, here's an example. The overhead light in the kitchen. Flip the switch. No, nothing there. It wouldn't come on. Now, until I discovered the problem, until the overhead light over the sink went out, it was working fine. And when I went upstairs and moved that, I went up into the attic and I moved the nail around and it got it out of the way. Guess what? The kitchen light stopped working, as well as did a handful of power outlets in the house. AC outlets in the house stopped working in that end of the house. Now, some in the same room work, some did not. Some overhead fixtures work, some do not. It's just a bizarre situation. But Friday, after I got through with the podcast, I go in the kitchen. I'm in the studio working on a handful of things. So I go to the kitchen because the studio is deep in a bunker below the house. It's the studio cave. I go to the kitchen. Wow, you can tell I haven't had enough caffeine. I went to the kitchen to fix some lunch around lunchtime and flipped on, just out of curiosity, flipped on the overhead light and it came on. It's not supposed to, but it came on. And it worked like that. It worked just fine all day Friday, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday morning. And then at some point during the day Sunday, it gave up the ghost again. So now it doesn't work anymore, as did the power outlets, because I had moved a cord for a lamp by Jane's chair. I can't talk today. I had moved this power cord for Jane's lamp by her chair back to its original socket again, and it worked. And then Jane tells me, "Oh, this is how I found out things had stopped. She tried to turn her lamp on, and it wouldn't come on." So I moved her lamp cord around, went and flipped the light switch for the kitchen overhead. It didn't work. And all of the other things that had stopped working before were now not working again. So I have this intermittent on-again, off-again thing going on in the wiring in a wall behind the kitchen cabinets. That's your picture. It's inside the wall behind the kitchen cabinets. So I have this mental image of me and two other guys today emptying the kitchen cabinets, taking all of that stuff out, all of the glassware, all of the coffee cups, all of the stuff that's in that side in the kitchen cabinets, it's all going to end up stacked up on the kitchen table and on the stovetop and the like. It's all going to get pulled. I just have this feeling this is what's going to happen. We're going to be removing screws and taking the cabinets off the walls so they can get to the problem. This is what I feel like is going to happen. And if that doesn't happen, then they're going to have to terminate that wiring and come in from the basement and come up from the bottom to solve a problem. But I'm glad I'm not the electrician. Anyway, that's the story, as disjointed as it may happen to be. But that was the weekend. The lights started working again and stopped working again. It's just weird. I mean, it's either an electrical problem or the house is haunted. And one way I'm getting it fixed, the other way I'm moving. Well, how about this guy in Florida? Did you hear about this guy in Florida? He hates Trump so much, he drove his van through a GOP voter registration tent in Jacksonville, Florida. They say they could hear him hit the gas. He accelerated towards the tent and plowed through it, knocked down their tent, knocked down their tables, scattered all their stuff everywhere. Fortunately, nobody was injured. They all got out of the way. He intentionally crashed that van Saturday afternoon in Jacksonville, Florida. Within hours of the incident, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office arrested 27-year-old Gregory William Lowell Tim. He's got four names. On two counts of aggravated assault, criminal mischief, and, get this, driving without a license. I'd like to know more. I want to know why he was driving without a license. Why does someone who is 27 not have a driver's license? Trim was identified as the driver of the van that struck the Republican Party of Duval County's tent around 3:50 p.m. The tent was set up in the parking lot of a Walmart supercenter. A volunteer recalls, I thought he was going to slow down, but he didn't, and he gunned his engine and headed straight. The Duval County GOP posted images of the scene after the incident on Twitter. Reactions to the assault came from RNC Chairwoman Ronna McDaniel, Senators Rick Scott and Marco Rubio, and President Trump. The Jacksonville Sheriff's Office still refuses to say whether the assault was politically motivated. Well, duh. JSO Lieutenant Larry Gale said, we're obviously going to follow that up, and we take that very seriously. Anybody who interrupts a political process in this country needs to be taken very seriously. It's quite obvious that the motivation of the what the motivation was. I mean, come on. The incident needs to be treated like a hate crime. Anti-Trump and anti-GOP hate crimes are largely ignored by the media. If hate-based crimes are to be treated differently, then it stands to reason that crimes like this, where somebody could have easily been hurt or killed, should be treated with the same severity as a hate crime. Now that the suspect has been arrested, it would be highly appropriate for Democrat leaders and presidential candidates to condemn the attack on Trump volunteers. People nationwide have been assaulted simply for supporting President Trump or being Republicans. It's hardly a stretch to say that the rhetoric coming from the Democrat Party and the media is responsible. Yet, this incident will not get the same attention as Jussie Smollett's hate crime hoax, which was blamed on the Trump administration. Will the media acknowledge the dangerous rhetoric of the Democrat Party and link the two? You know they won't. They will not. We're living in a time when, and I know you feel, you probably think the same way. You may not. But because of some of the places that I have to go, during the course of a week, I won't put a political bumper sticker on any of our vehicles. It's not because I don't want to damage the paint, because you can put them on the window and peel them off and then scrape off the residue. That's not the issue. It's not because I feel like they're tacky. Some of them are, but that's not the issue. It's because I know that in some places there are stupid people who can't see beyond a certain perspective and a certain viewpoint, who will, because I'm expressing a view opposing theirs, they will take something and smash the window of the car, or tear the bumper sticker off, or tear the bumper up, or tear the paint up, or something. I know that'll happen. That's the same reason I won't wear a MAGA hat. As much as I am standing behind Trump and what he's accomplishing for America, I can't wear a Trump, pro-Trump ball cap. And I wear ball caps all the time. I'm wearing one right now. I'm wearing just a generic black baseball cap that I bought on Amazon for $3. I have, trust me, if you'd like to ask my wife, feel free to. I have a mountain of baseball caps, and I go through them on a regular basis. Which one do I want to wear today? I don't feel like taking the time to make my hair look presentable, because if I don't spend some time on it, it doesn't. I put on a ball cap. If you happen to see me on vacation, there will be a ball cap on this head. Because when I'm on vacation, odds are I'm not spending time with gentlemen's hair products. I'm just not going to do it. But I'm not going to wear a political ball cap. As much as I support and as much as I believe, because I know the attitude in America today, with the rise of leftism, progressivism, Marxism in our society, that the useful idiots won't think twice about hurting me because I disagree with them. We're seeing this happen all across America, where some bird brain who has believed the leftist lie, who has bought in to the Communist Manifesto, has decided that it's up to them to cleanse America of people like me and you. and they will not stop at violence. We're watching it happen almost on a daily basis now, where someone is harmed because of what they're wearing, because of their support, because of their political views. It's ridiculous. It shouldn't happen in America, but it is happening every day. And this example in Duval County, Florida, Jacksonville, is just the latest high-profile example where someone drove through a voter registration tent and probably would not have stopped if they had killed someone. And that is insane.
God bless America.
Oh, yeah. It's a Monday. It's a rainy Monday here. Hopefully yours is going well. I hope you had a good weekend. By the way, thanks so much for being there. I appreciate the fact that you grab the podcast every day, that you listen, and that you share with your friends. Thanks a lot. Well, there's been a lot of shit chat about what's happening with the Trump administration terminating the positions of certain people. A couple of Vindmans got yanked loose. Yeah. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman and his brother, both of them got tossed, as well as did Ambassador Sondland, that's him, yeah. He also got pulled from his position, and the Democrats are making a big thing stink out of it. Actually, somebody just decided to make a stink of it at the Democrat debate. Joe Biden actually had people stand up and clap for Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, excuse me. And you know what's crazy about that? None of them lost their jobs. They just got reassigned. We're talking about government jobs here, people. We're talking about jobs that these people are pretty much assured of. They're not going to lose. They're just going to get reassigned. And the crazy thing is that this should have happened a long time ago. A long time ago. I've talked about this before. They should have cleaned house. They should have pulled all of the political appointees. They should. Okay, let me explain. When a president is elected, he will often reward people who have been valuable in his election. Some kind of a position, an honorary position, such as an ambassador. So someone who was key in some way in the campaign process as a token of thanks will receive an appointment as an ambassador. Those political appointments, those people. When Obama took office after the 2008 election, when he took office, all of the political appointments were pulled. All of them were reassigned. All of them were terminated from their positions, their current positions. All of them were. And that should have happened when Donald Trump took office, but it didn't. And as a result, there were rats running around behind the baseboards of the administration, so to speak. And they were doing what they could. They were conniving and scheming and looking for ways to get rid of him because he was dismantling what Barack Hussein Obama had built. And you remember what that was.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Uh-huh. That's what he was putting together. And those people agreed with him. They wanted to fundamentally transform this country. And when they saw, as soon as they saw that Trump was going to start dismantling what Obama had built, they started looking for ways to get rid of him. And one of those people was Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. Medal of Honor recipient Master Sergeant Leroy Petrie defended President Donald Trump's decision to fire Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, saying that Vindman had shown he couldn't be trusted. Petrie made an appearance on Sunday morning's Fox and Friends, responded to the news that Vindman had been fired from his post on the National Security Council and escorted from the White House. By the way, I actually personally enjoyed that part where he was escorted out. He said, "I respect Donald Trump's actions on escorting him out of the White House because he, as a team player, he should have brought it up through the chain of command and then blown the whistle if it didn't get approved. So exactly my insight is I would have fired him too. I can't trust you on my team. If you can't bring me things you don't agree with, I can't trust you on my team." Petrie went on to address the fact that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and numerous others, including Vice President Joe Biden on the New Hampshire debate stage, had lauded Vindman as a hero. That's what I was talking about. Petrie said, "I think this. I respect his service. I understand he's a Purple Heart recipient. Being a Purple Heart recipient doesn't make somebody a hero. I'm sorry." Pete Hegseth, he's one of the hosts. He said, "I appreciate your candor." By the way, Pete's also an Army veteran. He said, "I appreciate your candor. Wearing the uniform doesn't make you immune from criticism, especially on the National Security Council. It has now been identified. You're probably a part of leaking, certainly part of a concerted effort to hurt the president." Hegseth then pointed out what many have in the president's defense, that every member of the National Security Council serves at the pleasure of the president and can be reassigned for any reason the White House chooses. That's how this works, by the way. You're not guaranteed your position in an administration. It's all up to the president. Petrie went on to explain that Vindman, according to friends who had been with the lieutenant colonel in Ranger School, had referred to him as a chow thief. That term, chow thief, and had not thought highly of him even then. He said, "In Ranger School, they said he couldn't be trusted. They tried peering him out. They said, well, I guess it hasn't changed much." Usually folks that try to make a big statue of something, that what we call spotlighters in the military, trying to highlight themselves as a hero or doing something great. And you could do something great just doing your job. And then Pete Hegseth jumped back into the conversation to translate some of the jargon that Petrie had used to describe Vindman. And he explained, "Chow chief, that means that when there's limited food, you're taking some so you can have some and your buddies don't." Spotlight ranger, that's somebody who, when the spotlight's on, you do a great job. When the spotlight's off, you're not necessarily helping your buddies. And then there's peered out. Peered out means your fellow peers are voting against you to graduate from that particular school. So they said they tried peering him out. Wow. They tried peering him out. And he's a spotlight ranger. So he does a great job when the spotlight's on him. Not so much when people aren't paying attention. He's one of those guys. I think we've all worked with him. We've all worked with somebody like that. I've been blessed. I was blessed for the last 10 years or so of my working life before I actually retired from that, was that I was with a great team of people. No spotlight rangers there. They all had their head down. We're all working all the time. All doing their best to make sure that what they did was the best they could do. All the time. And if you work in an atmosphere like that, you know how great that is. And what a blessing it was for me for those last 10 years. But then there are those, and I know because I cross paths with them on a very frequent basis, who will sit down over a cup of coffee and tell you about their spotlight rangers that they work with and their chow thieves, the people who hoard for themselves. And, "I'm sorry, didn't you get any? Oh, if I'd known." They're everywhere. But when they're in the military, that's just egregious. That's just disgusting. It's revolting. We're talking about a field where that kind of honor, the honor the respect for everyone else, the team should matter more than anywhere else. Because when it comes down to the nitty gritty, so to speak, you've got to be able to count on the rest of the guys that are in your squad. You've got to be able to count on the rest of your team. All of them. They've all got to be trustworthy. And Venman clearly was not. He was looking out for himself. He had no respect for the chain of command because he had no respect for the commander-in-chief. But there is a process. And that process dictates that you follow the chain of command. And only if the chain of command breaks down do you step outside of it and register your complaints. We've seen example after example of that over the history of our country, and it's proven to be trustworthy. But then, people like Lieutenant Colonel Venman have never been trustworthy. And the people who defend them aren't trustworthy either. That's something to remember. Because the Democrats, the leftists, the people in political power trying to take the president down, they don't care about honesty. They don't care about doing things by the proper channels, as we've seen in this impeachment hoax that just happened. All they care about is power and control, and it doesn't matter who gets hurt in the process.
Yeah, you were funny. You're funny, all right. You're a scream. You ought to get a job on one of those excursion boats.
Ooh, I kind of like that. Do you get free meals? That's just what I want to know. It's a Monday edition of the podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here. It's the Daily Perspective. Monday, the 10th of February, 2020. We're one day away from my wedding anniversary. That's tomorrow. Please help me remember, okay? I don't want to get in trouble again. It is, it's a cloudy, rainy day where I am. Hopefully things are better where you are. Hopefully things are looking good for you. Well, I don't know if you heard about this, but more than 1,500 criminal illegal aliens are with active Immigration and Customs Enforcement detainers, ICE detainers, were released from Orange County, California prisons over the past 2 years, and many of them reoffended after release. ICE issued a press release that Orange County Sheriff's Department, OCSD, had confirmed that a California law passed 2 years ago, it's called SB 54, had created more crime in the state. Why? Because that's how progressives govern. Of the 1,500 released, despite active retainers, more than 400 were rearrested on charges including rape, assault with a deadly weapon, child sex offenses, domestic violence, identity theft, and driving under the influence. And, hey, guess who that is? I'll have to turn that off. But it's funny, I tell people I'm busy, and they still call. What is happening is that progressives, if I can just kind of nutshell this story, if you want the whole story, it's going to be in the show notes today. But in a nutshell, the government of California has released a lot of criminals back onto the street. A lot of them have reoffended. Why? Because the progressive worldview says these people are being oppressed by America. And they must be re-released. They must be taken back out. They must be allowed to live again. Well, you might think, well, it's just California. They're crazy anyway, and people are leaving, which is true. But it's not just California. On a national level, we're seeing things happen on a national level. AOC has proposed this legislation called the New Way Forward Act. It opens borders. It stops deportations of violent criminals. And I got to tell you something. It's a work. It's something. And fortunately, Tucker Carlson talked about it one night last week on his show on Fox News. And I want you to hear what Tucker Carlson had to say.
Crime and violence are the clearest possible signs that a society isn't functioning as it should. If they increase to a certain point, societies don't function at all. And we should be worried about that always. We ought to be doing all that we can to build a place, a country, where people who follow the law are rewarded, those who flout it are punished, and above all, children can live in peace and safety. That used to be obvious. It's not obvious anymore. At this moment, there's a bill pending in the Congress called the New Way Forward Act. It's received almost no publicity, and that's unfortunate, as well as revealing. The legislation is sponsored by 44 House Democrats, including Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's roughly 4,400 words long. That means it's almost exactly as long as the U.S. Constitution. Like the Constitution, it's designed to create a whole new country. The bill would entirely remake our immigration system with the explicit purpose of ensuring that criminals are able to move to the United States and settle here permanently with immunity. Now, you may think we're exaggerating for effect, but we're not exaggerating, not even a little bit. The New Way Forward Act is the single most radical piece of legislation we have ever seen proposed in this country, ever. It makes the Green New Deal look like the status quo. A document produced by Democrats to promote the bill says this, and we're quoting it verbatim. Convictions should not lead to deportation, end quote. Now, keep in mind, we're not talking about convictions for double parking or even for DUI. The bill targets felony convictions, serious crimes that could send you to prison for years and should. A press release from Congressman Jesus Garcia of Illinois is explicit about this. Garcia brags that the bill will break the, quote, prison to deportation pipeline, something most of us were for. So how does the bill do that? Well, under current U.S. law, legal U.S. immigrants can be deported if they commit a, quote, aggravated felony or a crime of moral turpitude, that is a vile, depraved act like molesting children. Under the New Way Forward Act, crimes of moral turpitude are eliminated entirely as justification for deportation. And the category of aggravated felony gets eliminated, too. So what does that mean? Consider this. Under current law, immigrants who commit serious crimes, robbery to fraud to child sexual abuse, must be deported regardless of the sentences they receive. Other crimes, less severe ones like racketeering, require deportation if the perpetrator receives at least a one-year sentence. Under this bill, there would no longer be any crime that automatically requires deportation, none. And one crime, falsifying a passport, would be made immune from deportation no matter what, because apparently 9/11 never even happened, and we no longer care about fake government documents. By the way, if you just renewed your driver's license to comply with the Real ID Act, you must feel like an idiot, because immigrants are getting a pass, you're not. Under the proposed legislation, for crimes that would still allow deportation, the required prison sentence would rise from 1 year to 5 years. We checked the Bureau of Justice statistics. According to federal data, crimes like car theft, fraud, and weapons offenses all carry average prison sentences of fewer than 5 years. And that's just looking at averages. There are people who commit rape, child abuse, even manslaughter, and get sentences with fewer than 5 years. Lots of them, actually. If the New Way Forward Act passes, immigrants who commit those crimes and receive those sentences would remain in this country. And of course, they will be eligible for citizenship day one, too, of course. But even that is understating the law's effect. Even a five-year prison sentence wouldn't necessarily be enough to trigger deportation. The bill would grant sweeping new powers to immigration judges, allowing them to nullify a deportation order. The only requirement for that is, quote, the immigration judge finds such an exercise of discretion appropriate in pursuant of humanitarian purposes, to assure family unity, or when it is otherwise in the public interest. Talk about open-ended. In other words, anti-American immigration judges, and there are a lot of those in this country, would have a blank check to open the borders. You would not be voting on this. It would happen anyway. Is this shocking you yet? Because we're just getting started. We read this proposed legislation. Here's another point. Current U.S. law makes drug addiction grounds for deportation, because why wouldn't it? This bill would eliminate that statute. Current law also states that those who have committed drug crimes abroad or, quote, any crimes involving moral turpitude are ineligible to immigrate here. The New Way Forward Act abolishes that statute. So a Mexican drug cartel leader could be released from prison, then freely come to America immediately. And if he wants, he could come here illegally, and it still wouldn't be a crime because, and you were waiting for this part, the bill also decriminalizes illegal entry into America, even by those we've previously deported. In other words, you break our law, we send you out, you come back, you break it again, you can stay. According to a document promoting this bill, criminalizing illegal entry into America is, quote, white supremacist. That's a quote, white supremacist. Now, by this point, you're beginning to wonder, are we making this up? We're not making it up. In fact, we're barely halfway through the bill. The legislation doesn't just make it harder to deport illegal immigrants who commit crimes. It doesn't just make it easier for criminals to move here illegally, though it does both. The bill would also effectively abolish all existing enforcement against illegal immigration. To detain illegal immigrants, ICE would have to prove in court that they are dangerous or a flight risk. But of course, ICE wouldn't be allowed to use a detainee's prior criminal behavior as proof of danger. That's banned. ICE would have to overcome even more hurdles if the detainee claims to be gay or transgendered. If they're under 21, or if they can't speak English and an interpreter isn't immediately available, they get a pass. In other words, it would be much harder to arrest an illegal alien in this country than it is to arrest you. They're the protected class here. You're just some loser who's paying for it all. But believe it or not, we saved the nuttiest part of this legislation for last, and here's what it is. What could be more destructive than changing U.S. law specifically to allow rapists, child molesters, and drug dealers to stay in America? How about this? Using taxpayer money to bring deported criminals back into America. That's right. This bill would not only abolish your right to control who lives in your country, but it invents a brand new right. Quote, the right to come home. It orders the government to create a, quote, pathway for those previously deported to apply to return to their homes and families in the United States, as long as they would have been eligible to stay under the new law. It's retroactive, in other words. DHS must spend taxpayer dollars transporting convicted criminal illegal aliens back into the United States. Not making this up. So who would be eligible for these flights? Tens of thousands of people we kicked out of this country for all kinds of crimes. Sexual abuse, robbery, assault, drug trafficking, weapons trafficking, human trafficking. From 2002 to 2018, 480,000 people were deported for illegal entry or reentry into America. And under this bill, you'd have to buy each of them a plane ticket to come home. Those tickets alone would cost about $1 billion. And that's before Democrats make you start paying for these criminals free health care, too, which they plan to do and have said so. The New Way Forward Act fundamentally inverts every assumption you have about this country. Under this legislation, the criminals are now the victims. Law enforcement is illegitimate. It's racist, just like the country you live in, just like you are. And the only solution is to get rid of both. America would be better off as a borderless rest stop for the world's predators and parasites. That's the point of this. And we're not overstating. Go read it. This is a big deal. This is not a small thing. This is not renaming a post office. It's hard to believe any American would put these ideas on paper, much less try to pass them into law. And yet, remarkably, that's happening. And even more remarkably, the press has ignored it. This isn't happening in secret. It's happening in the House of Representatives. Scores of Democrats have backed this bill. But the legislation has not been mentioned in the New York Times, has been mentioned on CNN, a news channel, or even in self-described conservative outlets like National Review. No mention. Consider if this were working the other way. If a lone, I don't know, Republican state legislator from Minot, North Dakota had proposed a bill this extreme that would remake America completely, the president himself would be expected to answer for it. CNN would demand that he disavow it, even if he'd never heard of it before. But when one-fifth of the entire Democratic caucus backs a bill demanding that you import illegal alien felons and then pay for it, it's a non-event in the American media. They don't think you should know about it. And that's dangerous, if we're being honest. Whether the press cares or not, these are the stakes of the 2020 election, and you have a right to know what they are. A growing wing of the Democratic Party views America itself as essentially illegitimate, a rogue state in which everything must be destroyed and remade. Our laws, our institutions, our customs, our freedoms, our history, our values. And of course, that's the point of all of this. An entirely new country in which resistance is crushed and they're in charge forever.
I hope you listen closely. Because what's happening is a direct result of
fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
It's a direct result. It has been the plan, and this is not paranoia. This is not conspiracy theory. This is just observing what's going on, watching what's happening, putting the words of politicians together with the actions of politicians and understanding that what they're after, what they're trying to do, what they're trying to achieve is the fundamental transformation of the United States of America, changing this nation from what it is into something it is not and was designed not to be. They're lying to us about the foundation of our nation. They're lying to us about it being built on slavery. They're lying to us about so many things. In an attempt to stir up the uninformed. And they're doing everything they can to create more uninformed people by changing our education system over the decades so that now the truth of American history is no longer taught. Only negative, leftist, Marxist opinion of American history is taught in our schools.
Light bulb.
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Good to have you along today. It's the Monday edition of the podcast. That phone call a while ago was the electrician. Hey, are we still on today? Well, yeah. I mean, hello. So they're on their way. They're coming from so far away, though, that I've got plenty of time to get things wrapped up today. Anyway, I mentioned before the break that our children are being taught a lie about our history. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm not imagining things. This is not conspiracy theory. In fact, the latest layer of this lie is called the 1619 Project, coming from the New York Times. Now, you and I both know the New York Times can't be trusted. They are a hard left newspaper. They deny reality. They translate everything they print through the lens of progressivism. Rather than being objective, it all has to filter through progressivism. And if the 1619 Project was just going to be printed in their pages and published on their websites, that would be one thing. But it's being picked up by education. A curriculum that makes the fantastical claim that a primary cause of the Revolutionary War was the colonists' desire to protect slavery. It's been adopted in 3,500 classrooms across all 50 states. Parents, grandparents, find out what they're teaching your kids. Find out what curriculum they're using. Find out what they're teaching the children and stand against it. Do what you have to do to hold the schools, the education people, the boards of education in your areas, hold them responsible. Make them admit they're teaching your children lies. And when you get your kids home, teach them the truth. And the lesson they'll have to learn. That's a hard lesson for your kids, regardless of how old they are. The lesson has to be learned by most people when they go to college. And that is, you know, you just have to let the professor be wrong, play along with the professor, and get your grade. But never, ever, ever back off the truth. Some of the nation's most renowned historians have called for the Times to correct what they're teaching. The Pulitzer Center, which is partnering with the Times to promote the 1619 Project, recounted in its 2019 annual report, quote, good journalism, innovative educational resources, and deep community engagement are absolutely essential to bridging the divisions that threaten to rip our democracy apart. We don't have a democracy. We have a representative republic. It is this belief that has driven the Pulitzer Center for the last 14 years. The Times lead writer on the project, Nicole Hannah-Jones, argued in her introductory essay to the project, quote, "The United States is a nation founded on both an ideal and a lie. Our Declaration of Independence, approved on July 4, 1776, proclaims that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. But the white men who drafted those words did not believe them to be true for the hundreds of thousands of black people in their midst." Hannah Jones went on to contend that the year 1619 is as important to the American story as 1776. That was the year, she explained, that British colonists in Jamestown purchased 20 to 30 enslaved Africans. Quote, "Conveniently left out of our founding mythology is the fact that one of the primary reasons the colonists decided to declare their independence from Britain was because they wanted to protect the institution of slavery." Well, at least she's honest enough to admit that slavery in America predated the nation's founding by over 150 years. That was, please understand, 150 years before the nation was founded. 150 years. A lot can change in 150 years, and it did. However, she alleges by 1776, Britain had, quote, had grown deeply conflicted over its role in the barbaric institution. There were calls to abolish slavery, which would have upended the economy of the colonies in both the North and the South, she wrote. Slavery was abolished in Great Britain in 1833, over a half a century after the founding of the United States. Let's get the timeline right. Great Britain didn't abolish slavery until over 50 years after we founded this nation. Also working completely against Hannah Jones' narrative is the fact that almost all the states north of the Mason-Dixon line had voted to abolish slavery by the end of the Revolutionary War in 1783. In case you're counting, that's 50 years before Britain abolished slavery. By 1804, all the northern states had passed a legislation ending slavery. All of them. The preposterous notion that protecting slavery was one of the primary reasons the American colonies declared independence is not supported by the documentary evidence from the period. Any middle school history student should be taught that the Stamp Act in 1765, followed by the Declaratory Act in 1766, were what really began rallying colonists against Mother England. In the Declaratory Act, Parliament claimed the legislative body held, quote, full power and authority to make laws and statutes of sufficient force and validity to bind the colonies and people of America in all cases whatsoever. The rallying cry in the colonies became no taxation without representation. Thomas Jefferson, a slave owner, made the case against King George III and Parliament in his 1774 essay called A Summary View of the Rights of British America. Pointing to Britain's tax and trade policies toward the colonies, the decision to suspend the New York legislature, and the imposition of martial law in Massachusetts as unjust acts that must be opposed. Thomas Paine, in his widely read political pamphlet called Common Sense, as a student you were taught about this pamphlet, remember? Published in January of 1776, did not list a fear that Great Britain would end slavery in the colonies as a reason for declaring independence. Over 500,000 copies of the pamphlet were published in just 3 months after its release at a time when the entire population of the 13 colonies was only 4 million at most. Paine was an abolitionist who wrote the preamble to Pennsylvania's Abolition Act in 1780. That was during the heart of the Revolutionary War. That freed 6,000 slaves in the state. The Declaration of Independence itself, which lists dozens of grievances the colonies had against the king and Parliament, makes just a passing reference to slavery by pointing to England's efforts to, quote, excite domestic insurrections. Jefferson's original draft submitted to the Continental Congress included a condemnation of the king's support for the African slave trade, writing it was a violation of the most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him, captivating and carrying them into slavery in another hemisphere, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. This language was struck from the Declaration's final text out of deference to the South, to South Carolina and Georgia, which wanted to continue the African trade slave, according to the Claremont Institute's founding.com. The Institute reported the British had encouraged slave and Indian revolts against the colonists. For example, in 1775, the British governor, Lord Dunmore of Virginia, swore to members of the Virginia House of Burgess that if any injury or insult were offered to himself, he would declare freedom to the slaves and reduce the city of Williamsburg to ashes. So the issue for the British rulers in America wasn't really a desire to free the slaves, but to use the freeing of the slaves to wreak havoc in the rebellious colonies. Some of the nation's top historians sent a letter to the New York Times back in December, taking the 1619 Project to task for claiming that protecting slavery was a primary cause of the revolution. We should all stand up against the 1619 Project. It's being taught in all 50 states now as though it's the truth, when it is a bald-faced lie that ignores the true history of our nation and seeks to rewrite it. Why? That's simple.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
That's what it all boils down to. The leftists are trying to fundamentally transform this country, and they can't do it when people know the truth about our history. We have to stand against it. We have to. That's all for today. God bless you, folks. Have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.